This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Embracing Change. We hope this podcast finds you well and in good health. We're just so glad you joined us tonight or today, whenever you might be listening to this, for our next episode. We're going through the three minds of incarceration. And our last few episodes have been on the first mind, which is before incarceration. Last week, we talked about defense mechanisms, and today we get to talk about a huge epidemic of what people suffer with all over the place, and that is control. I know so many people who struggle with this, so this is going to be a very enlightening episode, I believe.
At least I hope so. I can only give it from my perspective, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And where, you know, control... You know, control is not, you know, in the Bible, it talks about self-control. So I think that, you know, when you define self-control as the ability, I think, to pull yourself back from situations that are either unhealthy for you or you don't want to entangle yourself. It's self-control is a boundary, whereas control is false evidence appearing will. We talk about fear being those acronyms, but I also think control is false evidence appearing real. You know, there's a part of us that feel a need to control, or I'm gonna, you know, and you know, the daily and language now is talking about, you know, coming from the I statement to the we statement to the us statement, to be inclusive, because, you know, when you talk about just yourself, a lot of times it comes off as you think you know. And I don't necessarily know about you, but I know about me, and I know what I experience when I'm talking about, you know, the incarceration mind of control. For me, you know, it's like that is another drug. It is. It's, you know, where people get intoxicated on alcohol and all other kind of drugs that alter your state of being. Control has the ability to alter your state and your consciousness and your awareness. And it is something that I sense from my life over the years, coming out of trauma and coming out of pain, the need as another defense mechanism is control. And not believing you have a lot of choices in the matter. It's control may create you to believe that you don't have choices and that everything is happening to you and not with you. But reality is happening to you and with you. And so for me, it was, you know, everything that I'd done was a need to control the outcome, whatever it was. It was like, and so it's really a protective mechanism. It's how I protected myself through control. And so we all like it. We all in some kind of way have a story about, you know, I tell people all the time, hey, my name is Lakrita and I am a recovering person of control. And that means consistently realizing I have to filter the down to the deeper whys. Why do I feel like that? Why do I think that way? Why am I looking at something from that perspective? Why do I perceive that that is the truth? You know, all of that, because for me, I've had to learn that there's this need to feel safe, and control creates a false reality of safety and security, which is just not true.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, I've had to learn, and really I say, you know, go through detox and go through, you know, the process of restoration to what is the better truth, what is the greatest truth. And I know that now control is not a truth for me. It's like letting things go quicker, letting, you know, looking at them from a different perspective. Not, you know, just today had a situation, and but I can name 20,000 situations over my course of my almost 64 years of living. But today, just currently having one and realizing what was, you know, communication is everything, and you would love for everyone to communicate situations. So especially that for me, I don't care how well I become and how transformed I get, there are some things about me that never are going to change, and not that God is even requiring them to change. He's just requiring me to be aware of them. And I don't like to be sideswiped. Let me define sideswipe for me. Sideswipe is that when you make a decision to change something that you and I have agreed to for a length of time, and then all of a sudden you change it in the course and not include me, but you involve me. You have expectations of me, but you have not included me on those expectations.
The changes.
That, you know, the changes. Yeah. So that's a sideswipe for me.
Yep.
And for me, when that happens, it knocks me off my rhythm, because because I am a structured person, you know, I am a learner, I'm an achiever, I am, you know, those are my strengths, and that's the gifts that God gave me. So I realized that when I'm sideswiped in a situation, it creates for me a response to the fact that, why am I feeling this way? And I have to go through the deeper, as I said, the deeper whys. And then there's an emotion that rises up in me when it happens. And if I'm not careful, I can get caught up into, that's why I call control a drug. I can get caught up into the endorphins that it releases. And if I'm not careful and not pull myself back to see it from a different whole perspective. And so today's situation, I realize that I'm going to be sideswiped by humans as long as humans live. And I think they're going to live and be a part of the world as long as I'm living.
Imagine that.
You know what I mean? And so I'm now learning that I have a choice on how I position myself to the situations. And I don't have to let the situation to control my feelings, my words, my behaviors, my actions, my outcome. And so this situation that happened, while I was in the middle of it, and I even checked in with someone before I left and came to podcasting to say, did you think that I crossed the line to the point where I expressed myself in a way that could have harmed someone? And the person said, no, but what I did see you do is be very passionate about your expression, and you kept it on the I statements, and you talked about how it made you feel. And they said to me, and I commend you for that, because I could also sense when you might have been getting a little more frustrated about it, you said to yourself out loud, you said to the person and to yourself, I'm just going to leave it alone at this point. I'm just going to walk away. And I know when I did that, it was because I heard something inside me say, okay, enough is enough. In other words, don't go any farther than what you've said, how you've said it. Back away. Drop. I got this new saying that says, drop dead right here. Just drop dead. You know what I mean? In other words, do not move forward in this conversation, because if you do, you will get into control.
Yeah.
You will get into being defensive. You will get into just, you know, trying to, because for me, control says, I want to make you wrong and I want to be right. And I have to be, you know, I choose to be conscientiously aware of that and realize that I don't have to be right. I just want to be heard and I want to be respected. And I want to be able to share with you how what you did or did not do makes me feel.
Yeah. Yeah. And process that through.
Exactly.
In whatever way you can with someone. Sometimes people aren't safe to process with, but you did the right thing. You disengaged, right?
Yeah.
You knew when... if you kept going, it may have went to a really ugly place, mm-hmm. and old patterns and the whole thing.
Exactly. And that's how you get incarcerated in your mind, because those patterns is what incarcerates us.
Yeah.
It keeps us caged in to behaviors and outcomes that we say we don't want, but then we end up getting the same thing because we chose not to do something different.
Yeah.
And so when I look back over my life and control, you know, it came when someone took something from me. And then, you know, when they took that, I felt like I didn't have any control because I was a child. And so as I got older, I made a vow to myself that nobody would do certain things to me ever again. And so in that vow to myself, there were certain defense mechanisms and certain guards that I set around me, and I'm going to always be in control. But little did I know, being in control was really being out of control. Because what I've had to learn over these years of transformation and the journey of becoming the person I want to really be is that there's a difference between power and control. And power gives you the ability to make choices. That's I'm powerful. You know what I mean? I have power. But if I feel like I need to be in control, I almost feel like I'm powerless in some kind of way, that I need to control everything outside of me when the best thing to control is my internal self.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that when I look at that, you know, when I look at the definition or the word control, I just think we as a humanity, all of us struggle with that in some sense. And it comes from a lack of self-security. It comes from, you know, just pain that we did not, you know, I looked at the funeral of Mandisa's memorial this weekend.
Oh, yeah, that was just this weekend.
And
That's right.
I listened to her dad, and he shared something about, you know, his history about racism and white people, you know what I mean? And he said the thing that his daughter, you know, gave him was the perspective of unity. Because when he would go to her concerts, it was more of a different ethnicity color there than the people that he was used to based on where he came from. Hmm. And so it was so beautiful the way he put it together and the way that he saw it. And he said that he believes that his daughter wanted, if it was one thing he wanted from him and wanted from the world, is unity.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just so beautiful. But in order to have unity, you have to relinquish control.
Yeah.
You know, you got to relinquish your own perception and your own ideas, and you got to be willing to come into the middle and somewhat discard yourself and be vulnerable enough to be open enough to hear somebody else's perspective and realize that you don't have to be in control of it. And I'm learning that I'm only the inputter, not the outcomer. And I think so much control also deals with outcome. You want to control the outcome. It's like, I can't get in your seat, I can't sit in my seat, tell you what or share with you things that I think you could or could not do, and then get over there and ask you to move out of your seat and sit in it and then tell you how to respond to it. And I think control does that. It's like it wants to play both roles. And you just can't do that. And I have had to learn that. And it's taken me, I'm not perfect at it, but I am definitely better at it than I used to be.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen that too. Like, just when I would think it would be a situation, maybe here at work or whatever, where I think you would want to interject yourself or, I don't know, take over something. It's like, no, that's not mine. Okay. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very well.
You know, even with this transition, let's go with the most recent thing that I feel like I've had to over the last 3-4 months deal with is choosing to relinquish the ministry in which I found it. Meaning, when I say relinquish, meaning give it to new leadership. I have been very conscientious not to inject myself or, you know what I'm saying? I've been very conscious of things that I, you know, like, I wouldn't do it that way, and that's probably not the way I would do it, but I realized that I'm not doing it anymore. And so really wrestling that down takes a lot of energy, but it also shows me that I have the power to make the choice.
Yeah,
I have the power to make the choice on how I feel about it. Somebody said to me, well, the best way to not have it to affect you in that way is to stay away from it. No, I'm not going to stay away from it, because staying away from it does not really create me to have the maturity to know when and when not to be a, you know, to say anything or to, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to stay away. That's crazy as I'll get up, because that's not healing. That's not really going to teach me anything to not go to the locations and not be, You know, there's going to be days I don't need to go to those locations, but I'm not going to consciously stay away just so what I can be in control. Because if I can't be in control of myself and my own response and my own reaction, then woe to me. That's what I would say. Woe to me.
It reminds me of, if you pray for patience, God's going to put you in a position where you will have to develop patience. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be in those situations. You just have to, in order to be able to build your understanding of self, maybe.
Your resilience, or, stamina, your ability.
What works, what doesn't work, what are your triggers, how, like, and once you know those, how you're going to respond. And yeah, it's all of those things. So yeah, I think sometimes we do get in that vein of thought of, well, I just need to stay away from that because I'll exercise or I'll fall or whatever. And really it's like, if you want to resist something, you're going to be faced with it a lot.
Exactly.
A lot.
You know.
Until you learn it. And it's a funny position to be in, juxtaposed position to be in of, you know, I want this thing to be patient. So now I'm going to be faced with all of these situations where I'm going to have to be patient. I want to give up control. So now I'm going to be faced with all these situations where I'm going to have to give up control. And that is like, ugh. Especially, I mean, control, I think, is...
It's a lack of trust. Control is a lack of trust.
It is.
And so my trust was broken so early in my younger age. The trust was not a word that... in a vocabulary, or it was almost a foreign language. What does trust mean?
Oh,
you know, and so control became my trust.
Yeah.
Me controlling the outcome was my trust. And so I had to go and relearn what trust was, healthy boundaries, good communication, sharing my feelings, expressing myself in a mature way. There's going to be, like the person said today, you are very passionate. And I was like, okay, passionate to the point of rudeness? I'm passionate to the point of what? And she's like, no, you were very passionate. I could hear it in your voice. And she said, isn't that what leaders should be? They should be passionate about what is really important. And I heard you being passionate about the lack of communication here. And you, as an executive leader here of this organization, that is pretty much your responsibility. You were not passionate to the point of being rude or offensive, but you were direct, and you did not raise your voice, but you could hear your tone was very stern, and I could sense over in the next cubicle, I could feel your passion. I was like, okay, so do I need to apologize to somebody? And they're like, you know, I was checking in. They say, no, I don't think so. I think they both know you well enough to know who you are, and... if they were offended, it becomes their responsibility to tell you. You know, if you go before the Lord tonight, check that in when you do your check-in for the night. If he don't come back and I said, because I really can't, I don't know what it's like to apologize for something I don't feel like I did something wrong about. That's kind of difficult for me. But I've seen people do it but they'll say stuff like, if I offended you, forgive me. But what you're really saying is, I don't think I did, but if it hurt, if your feelings got hurt because I was telling you the truth, then forgive me. Well, and I'm not responsible for, you know, what I'm learning is I'm not responsible for your feelings.
No.
I'm not.
But you could approach it, you could also look at it this way. I would challenge that to say, you care about the other person and how they're feeling. And while you do not feel like you've done X, Y, or Z incorrect, I mean, at least that's the way I take it. So even if
That's for you.
Yeah. Okay. So when I apologize to someone sometimes, even if I don't feel like I've done something wrong, if I know I've hurt them and they are my brother and my sister.
Did they come and tell you they hurt you? Or did you
sometimes, sometimes they will. Sometimes I can just read it on their face. And it's like, if I hurt you, that was not my intention.
So when you take, when you use the word, if you take it away anyway,
Well, I don't know if they haven't told me.
That's
in the
what
situations
I'm
where they haven't told me. If they do tell me, then I can say, I'm sorry that I hurt you. Not my intention. And I don't
I just went through a whole conference about apologies.
Yeah.
Especially in the kingdom. I'm serious. No, yeah. There's an apology thing that Ford Taylor talks about, and it deals with control too, you know what I mean? Us as Christians, we apologize for stuff that is, we're almost falsehood. And he says something that I do agree with. He said that I'm not responsible for your feelings, if you know, or I am not responsible even if what I said to you hurt you, if you have not researched why it hurt you. So the reality of it is, if you got hurt, if I come to you in a gentle way and share the truth, and even when I do it and you still get hurt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then I'm not responsible for me telling you the truth that I believe that I need to tell you. And so if you go away from that conversation and you are offended or you are hurt or you're, you know, whatever it is, you know, you have to research, or I have to search myself to say what, even when I, if you remember when I came back to the where we were and I had went through that situation. Remember, I don't know if you heard me when I said, I'm going to have to look at myself and see why
that
bothered me so much.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Because see, that person's not responsible for why that bothered me. I am responsible for why that bothered me. And then if it bothered me just because of miscommunication and that I don't really like that, why does it bother me to a point that it can fester me into me getting a strong emotion about it? And so, you know, I understand this. It's a 6-step apology, and maybe I'll bring it next week so I can go over it, because I think that it has some merits to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the way that we say it, if I sincerely hurt you and I know, and the Holy Spirit convicts me or shows me that you could have did this different, Lakrita, and let me show you where this has the potential to harm, then that's one thing. But if I am just telling you the truth out of a monotone voice, like just telling you the truth, and you walk away, that person walks away because I told them the truth, because the truth hurts before it heals. That's my philosophy. It hurts before, usually it hurts. When the Lord deals with me, it hurts me first before it hurts me. I'm just saying, it will hurt me. Like I will feel a twinge of hurt and pain. Like, you know, there's some emotion in there that says, ooh, wee, that kind of hurts right there.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that when it comes to control, it's the same thing. I'm not in control of your emotions. I'm not in control. I'm in control of mine and what I do and how I do it, and try to research why. I have to look at the bigger why for Lakrita.
Yeah. Well, and I guess we may not agree on this, but I look at it like, there's a verse in the Bible that says, as far as it depends on me, I'm going to make myself
get along with everyone. You live at peace as much as possible.
Correct. So while I know that I don't have anything to apologize for, I will try to make peace with someone if what I've said to them isn't received, or maybe I wasn't thinking about the way in which I said something, not in any kind of malicious way. But I just leave open those places to make sure that when I delivered truth, I delivered it in love. Mm-hmm. And that I as a Christian sister or another sister or brother, that I will try to make peace with them. And if they need to express to me something, like maybe it touched on something for them, they are totally 100% responsible for their own feelings. But as much as I can work that out, I will do so. But if it can't, then if I know that I've done the truth and love, that's all I can do. That's all I can do. But at least I've done that. I've taken those steps to try to, I don't know, rectify, help them find their way, whatever it is. But, you know, what, as far as it depends on me, I'm going to do whatever I need to in that moment. But then there is a point where you have to say, I've done what I can. Now it's up to you.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I'm still saying that there are certain things that I'm just, I don't see myself doing false apologies to people.
No, not false apologies.
Like, I'm saying for me, just like, I can't like go to somebody and apologize for something that I really don't truly have not been convicted by God, or, you know, or tested my whys and it brought up something. And then they just, I don't know. I don't know. I can't really describe it. Well, it's just that I've learned, I've seen people do that. And it's like, once you start that behavior, it just continues. And that person has control. And now they never really ever hear you. All they hear is their feelings are hurt. And it's like, okay, every time I share something with you, your feelings is going to be hurt because of share some with you, because I think our relationship, and that's why they say you got to be really careful who's in your inner circle.
That's true, too.
And you got to be careful with the people you choose around you, because if they're not well and you're getting well, they can pull you back into that cesspool if you're not careful with some of the stuff that is not even healthy.
That's true. But also, I think there are two things there. Like, when you can apologize to someone, not for what you said or the truth you delivered. And that, when you say a false apology, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that you're saying, I wasn't sorry for the truth I delivered. But I think you can be concerned, maybe, for the other person.
I think only way I can apologize to someone if they come and tell me I did something to them.
Well, that's true too.
And if they don't ever come and tell me,
that's true too.
Then guess what? I'm not going just to make them feel better because I was passionate about my delivery.
Right.
Because I was passionate about my truth. I'm not going to go out of my way to go back and say to someone, oh, I know I was passionate about that. And if that hurt you, if I offended you or hurt you, forgive me. No, I can't even do that. Like, I was telling that person that was talking to me, and they're like, and I wouldn't expect you. That's not the person you are. So, but I'm checking in with someone who was on the side listening, right? Because I was in the moment. They were on the side listening. They could hear everything I was saying and doing. I wanted to know from them, did I, in your perspective, observing this situation, did you see anything? So to me, I was checking in. And they said, no, I don't. You were very passionate about it. You were straightforward. You were direct. You weren't loud. You weren't rude.
Right.
You know, and.
But at the same time, you did not want to hurt that other person. I don't think. No, right.
No, definitely.
Right,
right. That's why I checked in with somebody else to make sure.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
So I think the other party bears responsibility. Like, for me, I just had a situation where I was in a meeting where someone made a couple of statements and they were looking directly at me about things that I mirrored. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, they're talking about me. And I like marinated on that. And then I thought, were they really talking about me? Was that really about me? I need to talk to them. So what I did the next morning when I saw them, I went to them and said, hey, just wanted to talk to you. I felt like you were referencing me because you were looking at me, and the things you were saying, definitely I mirror. And I just want to like clear the air. Like, if you did think like those things about me, like, can we just kind of talk this out? And they were immediately like, no, I might have been looking at you, but I really wasn't referencing you. I was just doing a very general statement. You just happen to have some of these things happen that look like that. But no, I was not talking about you at all. And I don't want you to feel like I was. And so I'm glad you came and talked to me, and I'm glad we could clear the air. I was like, perfect. So I bore that responsibility. They didn't mean an offense. They were literally just talking. But in that moment, in my perception of what I was hearing, I needed to make sure that that was clear what they were saying. And then after that, we were fine. So I always try to make that a point. If somebody does something, says something, unless they're just, I can tell they're just being mean. You know what I mean? And I think you can tell. I don't let myself linger in that. I will go to someone if I feel like they've offended me in some way to just talk something through. And I go curious. Like, with this person, I was like, I saw you were looking right at me. Did you really mean that? Can we just talk this out? And they really appreciated that.
They appreciated that you came to them?
Yes, and clarified that. Because, yeah, who wants to hold on to junk like that? And that's just, I feel like that's fodder for the enemy to divide us, is if we linger as the offended party, if we linger too long in something and don't try to reconcile it, working out. Now, sometimes they can't be reconciled and worked out, because I have another situation where someone is really angry at me, and I can't fix it. Like, I can't change what they think. I can't change what they feel.
So you can't control the outcome.
And they know my door is open and that I love them very dearly, but that I can just say, well, you have control of your life and you have your right to your own feelings. And we just had to agree to disagree. But that I made sure they knew I loved them and my door was not closed. So sometimes you kind of land there. But I didn't have any control of that whatsoever. And there are a lot of things that we, it's Come funny, on. When we were talking about control, I was thinking about a million things in my life I try to control.
Give me five of them.
Like how I set up my day, like how I plan my day. I will try to control every like appointment thing that's going on every minute of my day. I will try to control how my house is set up and how it looks at any point in time, because that makes me feel better. If I can control what this looks like and what that looks like, and if my husband lays something in the wrong spot, I, you know, and that drives me crazy, like I'm trying to control, right? Sometimes I need to just say, okay, he left something over there. That's okay. I just got to be okay with the fact that he left something there, you know, so that would be one. Probably even to the degree of how people perceive me sometimes. Like I have, and I'm sure other people have done this, maybe you haven't, but I'm just going to tell you I have. Mm-hmm. I will not be the full me in some situations because I know I won't be received. And those are few and far between, mm-hmm. but I won't give my full authentic self because I know it won't be received. And so that's a form of control, right? I can't be fully me with, I don't know, someone who may think, you know, alternate color of my hair makes me some crazy wild person or something, which I, believe me, I've had that perception because yes, I've had purple hair and pink hair and green hair, whatever. And so just stuff like that. I know that wasn't five examples, but those were just the things right off the top of my head. So OCD, like OCD is a form of trying to control things around you, mm-hmm. when you feel like everything around you is out of control.
Mm-hmm. Or it needs to be in place in order for you to be in control.
Right, right. So I 200% identify with being a recovering controller, and I'm not there yet. And I work on it a lot, but I think a lot of people do. When there's so much chaos around us, especially if you've been a victim of trauma, mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. which you are one, of which I am one. Mm-hmm. When there's so much chaos around you, you look to the things that you have that you can try to control. The outcomes, how people act around you, how, you know, you control all kinds of things because that makes you feel safe.
Well, because most people, and it does, it gives you a
false sense
of security.
Right, but it's not.
You're not really safe in it because the world is unpredictable and the people in it is unpredictable.
Amen. Amen. You should say that again.
Yeah, the world is unpredictable and the people in it is unpredictable.
Amen. Yep.
And as much as the variable of how you try to plan and control, you know, even the Bible talks about, you know, planning your days or having a vision. As much as you try to do all those things, which are wise things, you cannot control the outcome.
Right.
All you can do, like a strategy plan, is put the things in place and hope that they come out in the way that you want them to, with prayer, supplication, and hard work. But you cannot guarantee that they will come, the outcome will be exactly what you perceive them to be, even when you were putting the strategy together.
Amen.
And so you just have a hope and a faith that if I do the work and I plan well and that I stay on target of the goal, that I will get the outcome I want and not be willing to just, I always say, stop, drop, and give up. You know what I'm saying? Or cave in and give up. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You have to be willing to stay in the game.
Yeah, and I know people that if they've, like I've known people, especially in work, when they've tried certain things or they've worked a certain way and then it didn't turn out like they wanted, like it just wrecks them.
Yeah.
Like they lose their temper or they're screaming at people or they shut down. Like there's a million ways in which you respond, but and that just, it's like we have to be able to pivot. I think pivoting is such a crucial part of life. Holy cow.
I mean, I'm learning that you got to pivot at all times,
man,
you know, and be willing to navigate that in a way that says, you know what I mean? I'm not in control. And so I'm not in the outcome.
Right.
And so it's and just I'm the inputter. God is teaching me that so much. It's like you are the inputter, Lakrita. I ask, you know, you to come alongside me as an inputter, not an outcomer.
Yeah.
And again, I think giving up or being aware of some of the dysfunctional controlling issues that I have had to overcome or to face or to deal with, has created me to know that it came from a lack of trust. And so the lack of trust, my trusting myself, but mainly trusting my relationship with the Lord, trusting other people.
Yeah.
I used to cut people out, and I think I shared this with you today. I just cut them off quickly.
Yeah.
You crossed me once. That's it.
You've shared that with me many times.
You know, you don't get many more times to cross me.
Yeah.
Period. Like, you know, and it used to be that way, but now I don't even feel cross when people do stuff. I just be like, oh, that's just the humans.
Yeah.
You know, it's just human behaviors, and I am sure somewhere, somehow, and I think a situation that I encountered for about 11 months, you know what I'm saying, with someone here at the ministry helped me really, that was a learning tool that she was, that person was a tool for me, shaping me into letting go of some of my control and my need to see the outcome the way I wanted to and look at it from a different perspective. And I think about Jesus, you know what I'm saying, and his trust for his Father and all of that and his disciples that was all fickle and all over the place. And yet, you know, he loved them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he washed Judas's feet knowing that Judas was going to betray him.
Yeah.
You know, he washed Peter's knowing he was going to deny him. And so, you know, he knew that Thomas would doubt him. And so you just learn how to have the relationships that is going to bring you. And I understand what you're saying. There's a difference between being a peacemaker and a peacemaker and a peacekeeper.
Yeah.
You know, the Bible doesn't tell me to be a peacekeeper. It tells me to be a peacemaker.
Peacemaker.
And
yeah.
And so, you know, part of letting go of control is also becoming a peacemaker. You know, making peace with all men, but mainly myself as much as possible.
Yeah.
Finding the peace that I need in order to become the best version of me I can be.
Yeah.
And I think that letting some of that go, yes, I have been, you know, in the same situations with, you know, I make my bed a certain way every day, you know, and I say when I'm making the bed, I can control this. I can control where the pillows go. This is the area that I have control over. I can control how clean my car is. You know what I mean? I don't have the right to control somebody else's bed or somebody else's car. And learning that, you know, I used to get in somebody's car and I was like, oh my God, your car dirty. You know what I mean? And how rude is that? You know what I mean? Or go to somebody's house and say, oh God, your house is so dusty. You know what I mean? It's like,
don't come to my house.
But I'm just saying, I would do that because I wanted to somewhat have their house in the same outcome as my house.
Yeah.
And that was a need to control. And it's like, and I would say it and it would make them feel bad. I remember a person who started working with me when she just got out of college, and she was a life coach here. And one day I walked past her car and it was so junky, and I knew how to control to get her to do it. I'm serious. I knew how, because control is nothing but influence. You know, it's how you use your influence. Do you use it for the good, or do you use it for health or unhealthiness? And so I was like, I walked out and saw her car and I was like, oh my God, you better not let them women see your car looking like that, girl. And she's like, why? I say, because when they see your car looking like that, they ain't gonna believe nothing you say, and you trying to coach them and counsel them.
Oof.
They gonna be looking at your car and say, I don't want to tell me nothing. Look at her car. Mm. When one of the standards of the ministry was cleanliness and orderliness, right, in organization. And so it's hard, you know, and she's like, you think so? And I was like, girl, yes, you need to go to the car wash and clean your car out. And I'm telling you, she just laughed at me. She said, oh, okay. She didn't say okay. She just said, oh, I hope that ain't what they think. But do you know what happened? The next day she came to work.
It was clean.
It was clean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she'll tell that story the same. She said, I don't know if it was true or not what she was saying, but I just didn't want to take their chance. Because I wanted to be an influence on the women I was serving. And if that was going to be a stumbling block to keep them from trusting me, that I was going to be asking them to do something I wasn't doing myself.
Yeah.
See, that was the bigger picture I was telling her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't really trying to control her, but it was like, it still was like, ugh.
You were trying to influence her,
I was definitely trying to influence her.
Yes. You wanted an outcome.
I did want an outcome, and I felt like I got that outcome.
You did get that outcome.
And so from there on, you'll be amazed. She said that really impacted her life as a counselor, though, because it was a practical thing, but it taught her something that she did not want to be hypocritical or asking someone else to do something she wasn't willing to do herself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I just think that for me, control also has to do with looking at it from a perspective. And if the Lord says in the book of Galatians 5:22, that self-control is a fruit of the Spirit, then I need to be able to control myself and not try to control other people. I think as simple as that. Now, I can't control the outcome of others, but I can decide to have the discipline enough to tell myself, you know, what I need to do in order to have the best life I want.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it totally does. And I think it even gets a little deeper of the fruit of the Spirit is a natural result of an indwelling of the Holy Spirit, which is a natural result of a relationship with Christ.
Exactly.
So I mean, you can't really have true self-control. I mean, you can control yourself, but as far as the fruit of the Spirit, true self-control, unless you are in daily relationship with Christ, you know, and letting the Holy Spirit have its work and way in your life.
You know, and as long as you are not, you know, trying to take, you know, like, this, you know, it defines control. A controlling person is they may try to control a situation by taking charge and doing everything themselves.
Yeah.
I've noticed that, you know, when people don't ask for help, you know what I mean? Because they believe they can do it better than anybody else.
Yeah,
so,
which is crazy.
You know, which also the body of Christ has many members, one body. So you can do something better than I can, which brings us into the next one, which is competition next week. You know, because you can do it better or you can do it different, you know what I mean? But I can do it as well. And I'm going to give you a prime example. You and I worked on the prospectus together the other night.
Yep.
When you sent it out for their input, you know, you and I know what we worked on it. You and I know that I gave you ideas and you just put them together, but you sent it out.
Yep.
So it has the appearance that you did that all by yourself, because the way that they're responding to the email. Let me just show you that when I was studying for this podcast, the Lord said, let me show you how easy when it comes to competition. And that's for next week. How, if you're not careful, you can get competitive and need affirmation or need validation if you're not careful. When you sent the email out and then, you know, we asked for input, I tell you, the person who emailed made me think of it more so than anyone was Dave's. When Dave, the way he wrote his email back, Jen, you did a great job, da 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 da. You know, do you have any hard copies? You know, da da da. You know what I mean? And so it's like, you did do a great job, but we did a great job.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And we both know that we did that perspective.
Right, right, right.
But if people are not careful with their own security, the Lord showed me this is how stuff gets out of hand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you don't know who you are in something, you can look at somebody else's response to something and feel a need to respond to it in a way that is unnecessary. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And so it was like, okay, Lord, I didn't realize that. And he's like, just be mindful of that all the time when you're moving towards this new position and you're working collaboratively with people in a different way. Lucreta, I want you to be aware of that. Just because your name is not mentioned does not mean that you did not contribute to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, and just because one person has a perception of one thing doesn't mean you need to jump in there and clarify it either. So I just know that he's teaching me some new things about life and collaboration and working together in partnership. And so it's like, oh, okay, Lord, I didn't really pay attention to, I saw it, but you know, he said, but these are the little foxes that can spoil the vine if you're not careful.
Yeah. And it's funny. He may have mentioned that, but I blew past all of that and was just focused on like what he needed, which were the hard copies in that one particular email. So I didn't even look at the compliment. Like I was like, okay, what is the suggestion for the change? Cause we were looking for the changes. So I blew right past that.
But it's just like, I'm going to go hit this, but you didn't blow past the fact that when this person had the email about asking you about the posters, and he's like, no, he addressed that to me. And I said, well, maybe just when he was asking you about the perspectives, like the posters that we want to use, and I'm just saying, remember the you said, and I said, well, maybe he didn't mean it for you. He said, no, at the bottom he said my name, and he was like you was going to have to make them or...
You know, I thought that was a different email. I thought that was from...
It was a different one. I'm just saying, but
okay,
how...
Okay, okay.
Like you blew past the piece that I'm talking about. I blew past that.
Oh, gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Gotcha,
so
gotcha,
how we,
yeah.
How we can blow past
yeah.
situations, but that one little piece right down there meant a lot to you.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
It's true.
And so it was like, you blew past your compliment, you know what I mean? And I blew past that little piece thinking, oh, he don't mean nothing about it. We know, you know, you sent it to him and...
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right, right. I didn't do it alone. Right. Because I was in fix-it mode. So mm-hmm. when I get in fix-it mode, I'm immediately looking for, okay, what is the thing I'm changing?
You're looking for a solution.
Right.
I don't even know if it's fix-it as much solution focus.
Yeah. And you
know?
That's exactly where
I
was.
You're looking
for the solution. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And even related to your situation earlier, mm-hmm. in my little bit of...
I saw you.
In my little bit of part of that, I was like... the original emails, I was only focused on solution, and it was like one little line that
could
became this really big thing
that could have indicated that he felt like he told you
right, and like somehow those things were my responsibility. Yeah, it was just yeah. So anyway,
and I don't even feel like I didn't even feel like that person felt like he was saying that person was saying that you needed to have told everyone. I just think that he was referencing that he did mention it to somebody.
Right.
And like that just happened to be you that he, and
self-defense.
Then, and then to me, that was like that, if I'm not careful, then that looks like the person closest to me that in working proximity, right?
Yep.
Had information that I didn't have, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
It's like, I just didn't even go there. I was so not focused on what
right.
that person
right,
was
right.
saying.
Right.
It
right.
was so, and, but I could see you over there, your wheels was turning and I could see you was looking over there, and I was like, you didn't even have to worry about me because I wasn't even thinking to come and even talk to you about it, you know what I mean, or even ask you about it, because not in that way, because I know you, and it's like
yeah, right.
I know that if you had some information that I needed to know, I already know you'll tell me. So I just
right.
like,
because I was in the same boat with you trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, so it was like, no, and I'm saying we just have to realize yeah. that about each other too.
Yeah.
That's another thing about, you know, dealing with we're controlling people is that, you know, the other thing is that, you know, they think they can do everything themselves. They control others through manipulation,
coercion,
threats, and intimidation. And I know, girl, if you could tell, ooh, Jesus, I look back at myself. Ooh-wee. That's all I'm going to keep saying is ooh-wee. And anybody that know me from back then know ooh-wee.
Because
I would walk in the room with the intention to intimidate. Like, oh, I'm intimidating you. And it was like threatening. And you going to bow down. And that was all my own insecurity and my own reasoning of control.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, my God. When I look back at myself now, it's like, ooh, who? How did these people? I'm serious. Some of the people who has been around me for years and loved me, I don't even know how they put up with me. It's like, how did you stay with me? How did you stay my friend?
Yeah.
In no way I would have stayed somebody's friend like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's not that unconditional love because they also saw the potential of the person I could become. They didn't look at me as the person that was acting out. They was seeing the person that I was becoming.
Yeah.
And so for that, I'm grateful.
Yeah.
Forever grateful because it was their patience and their love for me that helps me get to the space I'm in today to even be on a podcast talking about how far I've come from that issue of not trust, because control just comes from lack of trust and it comes from independence. And so for me to know I'm interdependent and that I trust people, and if there's breakage in that trust, I go talk to them and not necessarily throw them away.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a really great conversation. I hope you guys have gleaned a lot out of it. If you have any questions or comments or anything, the email address for this podcast is in the description. LaCreta and I would love to hear from you. Just send us anything you'd like. You can even just email to say hey. But thanks again for joining us.
The year was 1924. A missions worker from Dayton, Ohio, realized that Cincinnati was in need of its own mission. A vision was born after working with business leaders in the area, including James N. Gamble of Procter & Gamble fame. Throughout its 100-year history, City Gospel Mission has worked tirelessly in the community to break the cycle of poverty and despair as a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and those needing job services. City Gospel Mission has also stayed true to being Christ-centered, as the founders intended when they laid the foundation of sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. We look forward to our next 100 years for changing lives and saving souls. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2024 by Lacreta Bowman.